Iran's foreign minister says Israel's presence in the Persian Gulf poses a threat to all regional countries, stressing the need for efforts to curb further crisis in the region. The leader of an anti-Iran terror group is on trial as evidence offered at court shows direct links between the group and Saudi Arabia. Also in the headlines, Russia's president says NATO is not willing to address Moscow's concerns on Ukraine as tensions mount between the two sides over a possible conflict. Thank you for joining us. Now, top story. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian warns his Emirati counterpart that the presence of Israel in the region poses a threat to all regional countries. In a phone call, Amir Abdullahian tells Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed that more efforts are needed to curb sources that would create crises in the region. Referring to the Yemeni war, Iran's top diplomat says the continuation of the conflict is not in the interest of either side involved. For his part, bin Zayed says Abu Dhabi strives to encourage all Yemeni parties to find a UN-backed political solution to the conflict. The phone call comes after a recent visit by the Israeli president to the UAE. Now, Iran puts on trial the ringleader of a terrorist group. Evidence presented during the court session suggests that the group has received support from Saudi Arabia and Israel. Habib Chaib is accused of several bombings and terrorist operations in Iran's southwestern Khuzestan province. Chaib led the so-called Arab Struggle Movement for the Liberation of Ahvaz. During the session, it was revealed that members of the group visited Saudi Arabia annually. They received instructions from Saudi intelligence officers to carry acts of terror inside Iran. One of the members also met with the Saudi king. Documents further showed that Chaib himself had dealings with former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Faraz Najim is the manager at the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights and joins us now out of Ottawa. Faraz, welcome. We don't need to mention Israel's role in destabilizing the region. Many have said that is what has been well documented. What do you make of the role of Saudi Arabia here with regards to terrorism inside Iran?
We know the history of Saudi Arabia as a regime. They're state-sponsored and deviant extremist path of Wahhabism has always been exploiting terrorism and endorsing and supporting terrorism all through the world, especially in the Middle East. We've seen what they did in Iraq. So many suicide bombers blew themselves up in Iraq, killed a lot of innocent people. We've seen what they did in Syria. So it's nothing surprising when you hear about this happening in Iran, because that's their staunch enemy that they've created because of the U.S. Obviously, the U.S. and their allies are instructing the Saudi Arabian regime that Iran is your enemy. But Iran has never really committed any crime or any violation against the Saudi Arabian regime inside Saudi Arabia. We only see the fingerprints and the proof of the Saudi Arabian regime. We also seen this in 2010 when Abdel Malik Righi, another terrorist from the Balochistan area, also was for many years committing so many terrorist acts until they arrested him. Thank God that the that the Iranian government and their forces and their intelligence were so on top of this kind of case, and they have such strong intelligence that they were able to arrest this man. And he confessed at that point that Saudi Arabia had a big hand in this, the Americans had a big hand in this. So, it's not surprising that, we know that there's a big collaboration today of the The Saudi regime, regime and the Israeli regime and the UAE regime and the Bahraini regime. I mean, they're all working together. Right. And you know, they want to destabilize Iran.
For us, as you say, it's not just Iran where Saudi Arabia has played a deep destabilizing role. It has also supported terror groups, according to many experts in the region, as you pointed out as well, most notably and most recently in Iraq and Syria, Takfiri groups over there who have unleashed hell in the two countries. But we haven't seen, how does Riyadh get away with it? We haven't seen any punitive actions taken against the kingdom.
Well, you know, the Saudi Arabian regime is working, to destabilize the region and on behalf of the Americans, based on the interests of the Americans and the British and the French and, the Zionists and so on, right? I mean, this is the way they control the region. If they destabilize, if they cause seditions, if they cause, internal strife and hatred between Muslims, for instance, Shia Sunnis, or between political parties, things like this, this is how they are serving their bosses and their masters. And they get away with it because the United Nations is pretty much controlled by some of these powerful countries, as they call themselves powerful. But they have the veto and so on, and they get away with letting Saudi Arabia get away with all kinds of crimes. Look at what they're doing in Yemen, the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Saudi Arabia is clearly the one involved. They're the Saudi coalition. It's called the Saudi coalition. And you never hear about any sanctions or any punishments towards the Saudis, right? They still buy the weapons from all over the world, and they're still committing their crimes. And the same thing here. Everybody knows it's clear that that Saudi Arabia commits human rights violations against its own nation. It commits human rights violations inside Bahrain. Even their own citizens, like Khashoggi, they murder him inside a consulate in a foreign country. I mean, everybody knows the crimes of the Saudi Arabians.
Indeed,
I mean, the regime, and yes, unfortunately, indeed. Right? They let him go.
Indeed,
they got a green light to do crimes.
Yeah. Indeed, they did, according to the CIA. For us, thank you very much indeed for your time. For us, and Najim is the manager at the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us live from Ottawa. Now, moving on, Iran is commemorating the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank say since the 1979 revolution, Iran's unconditional support for the Palestinian people and their resistance against Israel has not stopped. Monica Andil reports from Ramallah.
While Iran is marking the anniversary of its 1979 revolution, which overthrew a U.S.-backed regime, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank hail it as the most successful revolution in the contemporary era. I met the former Speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Dr. Hassan Khreshi. He praised the Iranian revolution as a source of inspiration in the region and beyond.
Iran's Islamic Revolution has formed a historical turnout in the life of people in the region. This revolution came to stand in the face of oppression. For the Palestinian people, it was a victory. We saw how the Iranian people took over the American embassy and turned the Israeli embassy into the Palestinian embassy. We witnessed how Iran welcomed late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat when he visited Tehran after the revolution, and how the Islamic Republic embraced him. The most important achievement of this revolution is declaring the International Quds Day. We cannot deny the support Iran has offered to the Palestinian resistance groups.
After the 1979 revolution, Iran started supporting the Palestinians. It all began after Iranians took over the Israeli embassy in Tehran and handed it over to the Palestine Liberation Organization. As part of its effort to inspire the oppressed people, Iran aided emerging Palestinian resistance groups, notably the movements of Islamic Jihad and Hamas. Both the Palestinian factions sent their representatives to Tehran, while Iran's support for both groups continue until today.
Iranian revolution is one of the main revolutions in the last century. and this on the one hand, it is against the counter-revolution, it is against imperialism, and as long as it is against imperialism, it is for sure against Zionism, against the Zionist Ashkenazi regime. That's why this is very great help for the Palestinians. And as far as the role of Iran in the resistance, block, it is very important to mention that as long as you are fighting, you are resisting, then progressing. That's why the role of the Iranian revolution in this bloc is a first and very important role.
Iran's Islamic revolution was led by Imam Khomeini. The revolution was driven by anti-imperialist sentiments. To Palestinians, the revolution anniversary is reminiscent of their struggle for independence and resistance against the Israeli atrocities. Iran's Islamic revolution is viewed today as a potent, unstoppable force in the region and beyond. An example in this regard is the heroic struggles of the Palestinian people against Israel when a Qandil occupied Ramallah.
And the Israeli Minister of Military Affairs is in Bahrain, the latest high-profile visit to the Persian Gulf Arab country since Manama normalized relations with Tel Aviv. During the two-day visit, Benny Gantz will hold talks with high-ranking officials and sign a security cooperation agreement with Bahrain. The visit comes nearly 2 years after the tiny kingdom forged diplomatic ties with Israel in a U.S.-brokered agreement known as the Abraham Accord. Last year, Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid traveled to Bahrain, where he inaugurated an embassy. Israel and Bahrain are taking part in a U.S.-led naval exercise currently underway in areas including the Arabian Gulf and the Red Sea. The Russian president says NATO is unwilling to address his country's main security concerns as Moscow and the West remain locked in a standoff over Ukraine. Vladimir Putin has told British Prime Minister Boris Johnson on the phone that Russia is firmly opposed to Ukraine becoming a member of the Western alliance. The two leaders have agreed that escalation over Ukraine is in no one's interests. They have also stressed the need to work towards a peaceful resolution of the crisis. On Tuesday, Johnson visited Kiev, where he said the presence of Russian troops near the border with Ukraine poses a threat to the country. The U.S. Defense Department says it will deploy around 3,000 more troops, meanwhile, to Eastern Europe amid mounting tensions between the West and Russia over Ukraine. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says the new deployment includes 2,000 troops which will be headed to Europe in the coming days. Plus 1,000 soldiers who are currently based in Germany will be moving to Romania, a southern neighbor of Ukraine. The troops are in addition to around 8,500 American soldiers put on alert near the Ukrainian border. That's while Washington accuses Moscow of fabricating the context of invasion on Ukraine, citing the deployment of Russian troops for its claim. However, Russia denies the accusation, saying it has piled up its troops on its own soil purely for defensive purposes in the face of NATO's eastward expansion. We've talked to political analyst William Jones to get his thoughts on recent escalation of tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine. He believes that the US goal is to use the situation in Ukraine as a pretext to contain Russia.
There is no indication that Russia plans to invade Ukraine. The moves that they are taking on their border is on the border of a country which is in the state of a veritable civil war. And the reason they put the troops on the border is really to send a signal about not only about Ukraine, but also about the dangerous direction in which all of the agreements that have been made between Russia and the West since the fall of the Soviet Union are being violated effectively by the United States in this expansion of NATO right up to the border of Russia. Well, obviously, the United States, the West generally, the United States is more interested in creating their own control over all of parts of Europe that are not Russia. So that the goal here, although it's talked about in terms of the defense of Ukraine and victimization of Ukraine, is really an attempt to create a cordon around Russia, which they consider a not only a rival and a competitor, but also a potential enemy. And by doing so, they hope that they can keep Russia in a boxed in effectively, so that no moves are made one way or the other, which would endanger the hegemony of the so-called U.S. rules of the road.
Now, Russia vows to retaliate Germany's decision to shut down the German language service of Russian broadcaster RT. The Russian Foreign Ministry has slammed the media ban as an unacceptable and politically motivated move. It says Russia will take reciprocal measures against German media outlets and internet platforms that have deleted RTD accounts. Germany says the Moscow-based TV channel lacks a valid German license. Russia denies that, saying RTD has been operating under a European convention to which Germany is a party. Moscow says it will challenge the decision in court. Pressure piling up on Britain's Prime Minister in a leadership challenge. Now, a senior Conservative lawmaker is joining the chorus of critics, saying he will submit a letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson.
But it's not the previous battles that matter. It's the domestic and international ones ahead of us that count. And the question now is for all of us, is the Prime Minister the best person to lead the party moving forward?
Tobias Elwood says the Partygate scandal is distracting the government at a time of international crisis. He urged Johnson to call a vote of confidence rather than wait for MPs to trigger the process. Elwood also admitted that the Conservative Party is slipping into a very ugly place. The British Prime Minister is under fire after the release of a partial version of an internal inquiry. The report has described a series of lockdown-breaching parties held at Johnson's residence and government offices as a serious failure. Johnson could be removed as the Tory leader if 54 of the 360 Conservative MPs submit letters of no confidence to the party. That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. A new report has warned the coronavirus vaccine divide is costing lives and supercharging inequalities worldwide. We're prepared for you an article written by staff writer of Al Jazeera website under the heading, Oxfam warns as the poor die, suffer from COVID, rich get richer. new Oxfam report titled Inequality Kills says the coronavirus pandemic has made the rich much richer, while the income of the rest of the world, nearly 99% of humanity, has declined. According to the report released recently by the international charity group, the wealth of the world's 10 richest men doubled from $700 billion to $1.5 trillion during the outbreak, which has contributed to the death of at least 21,300 people per day globally. The report warns, "We entered 2022 with unprecedented concern, insisting that the current global state of extreme inequality is a form of economic violence against the world's poorest people and poorest nations." Highlighting the COVID-19 vaccine divide as a key precedent, it further underlined millions of people would still be alive today if they had had a vaccine, but they are dead, denied a chance, while big pharmaceutical corporations continue to hold monopoly control of these technologies. The report also emphasized structural and systemic policy and political choices are skewed in favor of the richest and the most powerful, resulting in harm to the majority of ordinary people around the world. The report further calculates that 252 men have more wealth than all 1 billion women and girls in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean combined, while 10 of the world's wealthiest men own more than the least affluent 3.1 billion people. Additionally, as the rich got a whole lot richer during the pandemic, the incomes of 99% of humanity suffered miserably. It also stressed that growing inequality made worse by the pandemic is sure to cause additional tensions, resentments, and further complicate nations' responses to climate change, to economic disparities, and social instabilities. The Oxfam report underlined, "These present-day divides are directly linked to historical legacies of racism, including slavery and colonialism." It further notes that since 1995, the world's top 1%ers have captured nearly 20 times more of global wealth than the bottom 50%, insisting that the pandemic has made things much worse. According to the Oxfam report, the wealth of billionaires climbed even more, and a new billionaire was minted every 26 hours since the pandemic began, compared to the last 14 years. The Oxfam report noted the chief executive officers of COVID vaccine developers Moderna and BioNTech made billions in 2020 as a result of the pandemic, adding that at the same time, the vast majority of the population remains worse off after losing income during COVID-19, and 160 million more people fell into poverty worldwide. Meanwhile, Oxfam argues that governments have the power to radically change course and blunt economic violence at its roots by laying the foundation for a more equal world. Oxfam's executive director, Gabriela Bucher, emphasized, "It has never been so important to start righting the violent wrongs of this obscene inequality by clawing back elites' power and extreme wealth, including through taxation, getting that money back into the real economy and to save lives." The Oxfam report says a good start is to impose a one-off windfall tax on the COVID-19 gains of the 10 richest men, which would generate $812 billion. It then pointed out these resources could pay to make enough vaccines for the entire world and fill financing gaps in climate measures, universal health and social protection, and efforts to address gender-based violence in over 80 countries. The report explained, even after the tax, the world's 10 richest men would still be billionaires and, as a group, would have increased their wealth by $8 billion from the start of the pandemic. Gabriela Bucher further argued, if these 10 men were to lose 99.999% of their wealth tomorrow, they would still be richer than 99% of all people on this planet. Oxfam's report is usually released just prior to the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos, Switzerland, but the gathering of the world's richest and most powerful has been postponed again this year due to the coronavirus pandemic. Recently, the World Economic Forum released its Global Risk Report 2022, warning that the lopsided economic recovery from the pandemic, much of which has relied on the rollout of vaccinations, has deepened divisions within and between nations.
Food for thought.
Salam, and since we are on the threshold of the meritorious month of Rajab, on the first day of which happens to be the blessed birthday of Imam Muhammad Baqir, peace upon him, the 15th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, here we present you a beautiful saying from him to contemplate upon. You are the son of 3 days. Your birthday, the day on which you will be taken to your grave, and the day on which you will be resurrected to meet your Lord. That will be surely a horrible day, depending on one's deeds.
Epic. Glory. Honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
غیرت شور غزل غزل آی بنو از ابتدا تا انتها مردمی از جنس غرور
اگر اتما پیش میدم باستم تلا در میدم سکونه هم مدرم بیانه در سمارم دارم دارم غرور اتلا
پهنای اروندت سلام اربارز و الوندت سلام برا سلام بر آسمان فکه با کوه دماوندت سلام.
See the world through IRIB English Radio, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Imam Khomeini and respect of law. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of respect of law in the life of Imam Khomeini. We can see that being a jurist after the revolution, when the people used to ask him about the following the rules and laws of a country or the Islamic Republic, we can see in all those questions, he has said that you should live according to the laws which are set by the Islamic Republic of Iran. And this Islamic Republic and its laws are applied on everyone who lives within this country, this state, this Islamic state. Therefore, respecting law is the first thing, because when we respect law, it means that we respect that country. It means that we respect those people. It means that we respect the struggle which was behind this revolution. Therefore, we can see clearly that in his life, whenever he was asked about the laws and the rulings which are set in a country, or especially in the Islamic Revolution, he always said and he emphasized to respect it and to live according to these laws, and even not to break a red light in the midnight if it is 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the midnight and there is no one in the street, and if the lights are red, you need to stay behind it. Therefore, these things shows us that respecting law is the first thing, is the first step to become a good Muslim, to have a good Islamic lifestyle. The first step is to respect the law.
Congratulations to all Muslims across the world on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Listen to our special programs on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back. We were talking about the topic of respecting law in the life of Imam Khomeini. Now, when we look at the life of Imam Khomeini, we can see that when he was in France, it has been narrated by many companions who were with the Imam. They said one day, one of our friends, he brought a goat and they wanted to slaughter it Islamically. And because in France they couldn't find the halal meat at that time, there were no shops, so they brought a goat and they slaughtered it in the same yard where Imam Khomeini was living in that house. And later when they have slaughtered it and when they cooked it and when they brought the food in front of Imam Khomeini, Imam asked them, like, where did you bring this meat from? Because here you cannot find a halal meat. There is no shop of halal meat. They said, like, we brought a goat and we slaughtered it in the courtyard of the same house. And then Imam Khomeini refused to eat that meat. He said that because according to the rules and laws of France, you cannot slaughter any animal within your premises. And obviously there are specific rulings about it. Therefore, it is against the law of France. I will not touch this food. And he did not eat from that food. Now, this shows us that this kind of respect to the law shows us that how bound he was to the Islamic teachings, because Islam talks about the respect of people, respect of laws, respect of others. And if we can learn how to respect each other, we can advance in our life. And Allah will have His blessings upon us, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allah, 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 Allah.
إن الذين قالوا ربنا الله ثم استقاموا تتنزل عليهم الملائكة.
Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Stunning light shows and hanging lanterns have illuminated cities across China to welcome the new lunar year, also called the Spring Festival. The city of Zigong has taken the spotlight with a sea of lanterns, turning it into a scene straight out of a fairy tale. The city is famous for lantern making and brings a festive mood this time around every year. The lanterns are usually made in all kinds and shapes, including legendary creatures representing each lunar year on the Chinese calendar. This year's zodiac is the tiger, which is decorated vividly on special couplets. The New Year festivities officially begin on Tuesday and will continue for 15 days. The Lunar New Year is considered the largest migration of people in the world, as millions travel back to their towns and villages to mark the event.
Sub-zero temperatures in the Midwestern U.S. haven't held anglers back from participating in the world's largest charitable ice fishing contest. Some 10,000 people from across the world gathered in the state of Minnesota to put their ice fishing skills to test. They dug thousands of holes in Gull Lake in a matter of hours. Some $200,000 in prizes were up for grabs in the contest. The volunteer-led annual event has so far raised about $4 million for 67 charities since it was first held in 1991. Beryl Carr is a special volunteer at a hospital in London. What makes her special, you might wonder? Well, the fact that she celebrated her 100th birthday last month. Carr has been volunteering in Ealing Hospital for more than 18 years. She works in the hospital's cafe and says her work is her lifeline. This incredible 100-year-old lady says she enjoys helping those who are not as fortunate as she is and that she has no intentions of retiring. The hospital staff say her presence has been very motivating.
Many of us look at her. She's always got a smile on her face, a swagger as she walks. And you come back from a clinic or a ward round, you're absolutely tired, and she just inspires you as soon as you see her.
Even the coronavirus pandemic has not stopped Carr from volunteering. Born in a nearby town, Carr says she moved back to the neighborhood more than two decades ago after the death of her husband. When asked about the secret to her long and healthy life, she refused to answer, saying she's not planning on revealing that secret. A surprise in a Chinese zoo ahead of the Lunar New Year. 15 rare golden tigers make debut in front of excited fans. A large group of visitors gathered in China's Yellow River Delta Zoo to watch the rare animals. This zoo is the largest breeding base for golden species of tigers across China. The animals are being strictly protected amid fear surrounding their extinction. The golden tigers are a variant of Bengali tigers with rare color variations, including black stripes. They are no longer extant in the wild.
The most powerful telescope ever built in the world is now at its final destination in space. After traveling for nearly 1 month, NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has reached its final parking spot in space, which is approximately 1 million miles away from Earth. The mission of the tennis court-sized telescope is to explore the cosmos and better understand the early days of the universe. The $10 billion telescope will also carefully monitor faraway exoplanets and study the atmospheres of planets outside our solar system. It's more advanced than NASA's iconic Hubble telescope. The streets in the Taiwanese capital are decorated vividly to welcome the Year of the Tiger beginning on February the 1st. Residents are using tiger sculptures and totems to adorn the streets of Taipei. Shops are booming as people head out to buy special couplets ahead of the new year, also called the Spring Festival. Many are hoping they can completely defeat COVID-19 this year, as celebrations were scaled down due to the pandemic last year. The Chinese New Year is celebrated by almost 2 billion people across the world, though mainly in Asia. There are 12 animals representing each lunar year on the Chinese calendar. This year's zodiac is the tiger, a symbol of strength and power. A national zoo in Washington is now home to a new quill-covered resident, the second offspring of a porcupine family. Zoo staff reported the birth of the porcupet earlier this month during a snowstorm. They say they are awaiting a DNA analysis to reveal more information about the baby porcupine. Its brother is now 4 years old. The two siblings are the fourth generation of this family to live in the zoo's mammal house. These animals are born with the ability to climb and look almost identical until they are 6 months old. Natives of South America, these creatures are one of the 18 porcupine species that exist in the world today. The house in Colombia has become a hotspot for tourists. It's built in a unique way, and if you want to enter the house, you have to first walk on the ceiling leading to the door. The upside-down house is named Casa Loca and is located in Guatavita, a short distance from the capital, Bogota. Tourists can be seen walking around taking pictures of this exceptional structure. Many say it fills them with joy to visit such places. Some tourists say this has provided them a chance to gain momentum, some relief from the struggles of the pandemic.
We've come from a pandemic. We've emerged from a lockdown. So this helps people have a moment of relaxation with a novelty that we did not have. You have fun while snapping photos. It puts your mind at ease.
The Austrian creator of Casa Loca says he first got the idea to build a house when he was visiting a similar place in his country back in 2015. He says his grandchildren were stunned by the creation, and that's why he decided to make an upside-down house in Colombia, where he lives now. He says people initially thought he was mad, but he decided to accomplish his plan anyway. The pandemic slowed him down a bit, but he proudly inaugurated the place 3 weeks ago.
Iran has won the first title in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championship. Saman Kujuri has more.
Talented Iranian children have ranked first in team category of the 20th Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships, which was held online. Children in five different age groups, including age 5 to 7 as Group A, 8 to 9 Group B, 10 to 11 Group C, 12 to 14 Group D, and 15 or older in Group E, annually attend the contest solving multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, cube root, fractions, time, and etc. 572 students from 21 member states participated at the event.
This year, Iranian students have won the title of Champion of the Champions in two categories. Moreover, They won titles in all categories, including Champion of Champions titles, Champion titles, First Winners, and the Second Winner titles. In 2023, Iran will host the 22nd edition of the Pan-Pacific Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Association Global Abacus and Mental Arithmetic Championships.
The Smart Kids Institute holds a national competition annually in August to select members of the Iranian team for attending the PALMA Global Abacus Championships. Children from 17 to 13 years of age take part in the competition to solve some 7 mathematical test sheets using abacuses.
I am 12 years old. I have won the first title in this round of the international competitions. I have been practicing with abacus for 4 years. In the competitions, we had to solve multiple math equations, including division, multiplication, square root, and etc.
My math teacher encouraged me to learn abacus 5 years ago. Abacus and mental arithmetic skills had great impact on my mental growth and helped me a lot in my math lessons.
The championship, organized by a non-profit organization established in 1999, is an example of what can be achieved with early intervention in abacus math and mental arithmetic education.
The purpose of the competition is to allow for observation of mental arithmetic skills from countries around the world and to promote related education to find new talents in this field. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Traveling around the world is a wish a lot of people have, but never actually get the chance. However, the Belgian-British girl has achieved that feat at only 19. Zora Rutherford flew back home on Thursday to a crowd made up of family members, friends, fans, and journalists. She completed her odyssey after just over 5 months, traveling over 52,000 kilometers. Zara is the youngest female in the world to fly around the globe. She achieved this using a microlight aircraft, which weighs only 325 kilograms and has very low fuel consumptions. That's absolutely amazing. Let's take a listen.
Right, the plane obviously is a bad for the environment. I'm not trying to claim that it is. But I have chosen one of the best aircraft to do it with. The fuel consumption is amazing. For this whole trip, it's used the same amount of fuel as a Boeing uses in about 10 minutes for the whole trip around the world, which I think puts things into perspective. Obviously, it is bad, but I'm really trying to minimize my impact as much as possible.
Zara says the scariest part of her trip was flying over the frozen expanse of Siberia, a place with no human habitation close by. The teen adventurer also had to deal with different countries' health restrictions. Zara had to take multiple PCR tests on her journey, while China's COVID-related regulations meant she could not use the country's airspace. Now, Zara says she is glad she can stay in one place for a few months. Who knows what her next adventure will be? In the world of art, a Japanese artist named Sachi is creating incredibly realistic felted wool portraits of cats. Sachi calls her artworks Wakuneko, which directly translates to frame cat. Her work is highly popular, and she has more than 600,000 followers on different social media platforms. Each portrait takes a whopping 1 month to complete. The crafting process starts with Sachi looking at dozens of photos of the cat she wants to replicate. Then she prepares the required materials before preparing the foundation and mounts the felt onto it. The most difficult part of the job is making the subject's eyes. According to Sachi, it is also the most special stage.
I think that the moment when the cat's spirit enters into the artwork can be presented through the eyes.
In that sense, I have been very particular about how to make the eyes.
Sachi's portraits have inspired people around the world to adopt homeless cats. Now she hopes to hold an exhibition showing various cats, including ones with physical handicaps, in order to inspire more adoptions of shelter cats.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Islamic Revolution as role model for Islamic movements. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are in 10 days done, the period marking the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. In the second episode of this series, you're going to hear on the role of the Islamic Revolution in formation of Islamic movements in the region. Stay tuned, please. The 20th century was the century of wars, which were mainly waged by the countries seeking power and subjugation of poor nations. The First World War broke out in 1914 and lasted for 4 years, killing millions of innocent people and devastating many cities and countries. This war set the ground for colonization of the Islamic countries by Western states, mainly Britain and France. Egypt, with its geostrategic situation in the region, was subjugated as a British colony. It was in the same years that Britain issued Balfour Declaration, which was indeed the prelude for fabrication and implantation of the Zionist regime in the heart of the Islamic nations. Although Iran had no role in the outbreak and spread of the war due to its strategic situation and the incompetence and servility of its shahs, turned into the road for commutation of Russian and British military. Hence, Iran was illegally occupied by the British forces till the end of the war in 1918. 21 years later, the Second World War broke out, which lasted for 6 years and resulted in coming to power of Russia and the United States of America as the two superpowers of the world. Again, the share of the Muslim nations was famine, disease, devastation of all infrastructures, pillage of resources, and colonization. The unwanted presence of foreigners in the Islamic countries urged many groups and establishments to come to existence, which sought to save their nations from various imported isms like Marxism, socialism, liberalism, and so on. Most of these groups and establishments were led by religious figures and reformists. Sayyid Jamaluddin Asadabadi was among these figures. He traveled to different Islamic and European countries and tried to impact people from various walks of life. Therefore, colonialists expelled him from Egypt and dissolved his party. Asadabadi was influenced by Shia ulema in Iran and Iraq. In 1952, Jamal Abdel Nasser annulled the royal government through a military coup and continued his struggles against colonialism. Yet his movement was deviated due to excessive pan-Arabic ideas and socialist proclivity in economy. In 1948, concurrent with the invasion of the global Zionism into Palestine and massacre of the children of the land by invaders, Muslims tried to repel the invasion. However, the servility, vassalage, and passivity of Arab governments left no ability and motive for them to defend the Holy Land. In 1967, Egypt, Iraq, Jordan, and Syria were allied to destroy the fabricated regime called Israel. Yet, they were badly defeated in a matter of just 6 days. This scandalous defeat set the stage for the decline of Abdel Nasser and turned down many Muslims across the world. In the midst of these events, a great clergyman from the Iranian city of Qom started his worldwide revolution to defend the integrity of Islamic values against the entire world of arrogance, Zionism, and colonialism. He was none but Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, who soon became known as Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini had studied in Qom and obtained the degree of Ijtihad, that is, independent perception of Islamic sciences through the Quran and the words of the Prophet and his infallible progeny, in the age of 27. Thus, in addition to education, authoring books and training students, he was struggling against the domestic tyranny and foreign colonialism. According to the Quran and the words of the Prophet and the infallible Imams, this great leader believed that selfishness and giving up uprising for God's sake were the main causes of Muslim nations' misery and dominance of the global arrogance and Zionism. He raised progressive doctrine of velayat-e-faqih, meaning rule of the supreme jurisprudent, as the key to victory over enemies of Islam. This jurisprudent should have a very deep knowledge of the Islamic sciences and should be the bravest clergy who is also well aware of the developments of the time. After the 6-year war of Arabs against Israel, Imam Khomeini issued a fatwa
whereby he declared as haram or religiously forbidden any commercial and political relation with Israel and consumption of Israeli goods. He also issued another fatwa in which he clearly permitted spending alms and zakat for Palestinian combatants.